At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Do the Work Podcast. My name is Sabrina Zohar, and I am your host. Welcome back for another week, babes. Happy Friday, as always. I am so, so happy to be here with you guys. Today, we are going to be talking all about anxious attachment and how to really actually start to like work through that anxiety and work towards a secure relationship. And I actually have Dr. Morgan Anderson. I love Morgan. She's fantastic. She is so lovely. She has a very similar story of like having such high anxiety and really working through it. And now she has this amazing fiance, and she really works like I do to help people everywhere to heal through that anxiety and start to make those awarenesses. And guys, as always, let's do some housekeeping, shall we? So, as a reminder, please, please, please do not forget to rate the show. So many of you guys listen to this and we do not get so many ratings. It is so simple. On Apple, you should literally scroll to the bottom and you can leave a review. You can write one or just leave stars. Please leave 5 stars if you think it's worth it. And then on Spotify, it's at the top. If you're on the podcast page, there are 3 dots. You click it and you press rate show. That's it. But if we don't get ratings, then we start to plummet on the Spotify charts and all the other charts, and then we don't have the sponsors, and then I can't do the show, and you see where this is going. So help a sister out. Please, please rate the show. If you guys want more, if you want bonus episodes, you don't want to deal with the ads, great. You guys can become a subscriber. You get 2 bonus episodes a month and Ask Me Anything with me and Tech Guy, and a custom episode that you guys get to choose, as well as ad-free for every podcast episode from the past to now. And guys, as always, thank you. Thank you for everything. Don't forget the course is out. It is going. It is rearing. We just had our first like cohort of people that finished, and the feedback was better than I think I actually ever could have imagined. And I'm just so grateful. And it's something that like, if you want to start looking at your limiting beliefs and focusing on your dating patterns and what's coming up for you, what's that inner child work? How can you reconnect with you? What are your boundaries and non-negotiables? Like, these are all things that we go over in the course. You've got 8 weeks. It is dripped out. So you don't just get everything off at once. You have to actually do week by week and implement the information that you're learning, because I genuinely want you guys to grow and heal. So you get worksheets, you get 3 meditations. Once you are done with the course, you have it access for life. So you can come back anytime you need the meditations, anytime you need the support. It is there for you in all of those ways. And you know, guys, not everybody can work one-on-one, and I totally understand. I'm actually going to be limiting my books a little bit more. So if you want to work one-on-one, take the advantage of it now and book out. And if not, that's totally cool. That's why the course is there for you guys. But there's so many other things to work on. So I just want to share all of the options, guys. And as always, just thank you so much for the support. Whether you want to invest financially, just with your time, it doesn't really matter. Sharing this with your friends, listening, giving feedback, rating the show, following along on Do the Work on Instagram and Sabrina.Zohar on TikTok, now on YouTube. It's just, it fills my heart and it makes it so much more fun for me to continue doing this, because I genuinely want to fucking help you guys. And I'm so excited to be able to continue doing that. So, without further ado, let's get right on into it, shall we? Hey, Morgan.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you. Welcome to the Do the Work Studios, and welcome to San Diego.
Oh my gosh, I'm loving it.
Oh God, I'm so stoked to have you. I'm so stoked to have you because it's so nice to have a fellow girl, like anxious girly, that experienced so much of the same, like similar things, but also a different story. So I'm excited to introduce you to the audience, but could you, if you could, introduce yourself to the audience of like, who is Dr. Morgan?
Yes, I'm Dr. Morgan. I'm the host of the Let's Get Vulnerable podcast, and I'm a psychologist who created a program helping women heal to take them from whatever attachment style they've had to become securely attached. Basically, I've taken my life's work in understanding attachment styles and helping people heal no matter what's happened to them. And I love this work because I had my own personal journey of having anxious attachment, of having toxic relationships, on being on the dating roller coaster, and then learning how to become securely attached.
I'm curious, if we could you share a little bit about your story? Because I know I got to meet your man, and but I think it would be really great, because like so many people know mine, and it's like, and Lord knows, but like, what was your journey with anxiety, anxious attachment, and like your dating experiences? Like, what were you seeing?
Yeah, so I'll go all the way back to childhood, because I think that's helpful. That's where it starts for us all, right? Mm-hmm. I lost my mom at a young age. I was 6 years old. And what happened after that was a lot of chaos in my childhood. Essentially, my dad didn't really know how to cope with it. And he started dating, and he basically was very emotionally unavailable. And I think anytime you have a sudden loss like that as a child, I couldn't rationalize it. I couldn't make sense of how this happened. All I knew is my mom was there one day and then she was gone the next. So I think anyone who has lost a parent at a young age can relate to how that creates anxious attachment style.
Yeah.
So then growing up, I witnessed my dad in a couple unhealthy marriages, and I learned that love wasn't safe. And I experienced a lot of difficulty in my relationship with my dad. I'm thinking about it was just Father's Day. We've worked so hard on our relationship, and I can say now we actually have a good relationship. But back then, I didn't feel like a priority. I felt like I needed to change myself to be loved by him. And I was constantly trying to earn his love. So what happened? I started dating emotionally unavailable people.
Yeah.
Even from my first boyfriend in middle school was like a long distance relationship. I'm in middle school, because I think this also happens where you just like want that love of someone with anxious attachment. I would have done anything just to get someone to notice me. And then I felt like my relationships just got worse and worse and worse. And I was in graduate school studying to be a clinical psychologist, and I found myself in a relationship with a narcissist.
Fun.
Yes. And this was the first 6 months. You know how it goes. It was all the love bombing. I was being flown around the country, and I was a broke grad student, and I'm going out to all these fancy dinners, and I'm getting all these gifts, meeting the family, going on the family vacations. And I thought, oh my gosh, I met my person, right?
Oh yeah.
And then 6 months in, the gradual discard phase and the devaluing started to happen. And I experienced a lot of emotional abuse.
Yeah.
And I found myself at a rock bottom moment. I was filling out a police report in the lobby of my apartment building. And I just remember watching my neighbors walk by, and I was so embarrassed. And I saw like the looks of pity that they had for me. And I just didn't recognize myself in that moment. And I had one of those out of body experiences where I thought, okay, I can keep going down this path, but it's going to get worse and worse, or I can decide to heal. And I need to figure out, how do you have a healthy relationship? It was like in that moment, that became my question. How do you have a healthy relationship? And I decided to throw myself into researching it. And then that's when I discovered attachment theory and attachment styles. And here we are today. I mean, it took me a long time to do my own work. But now I've helped over 600 women go through the program I created, and I'm in an incredible relationship of over 3 years now with an emotionally available partner who chooses me, and we're engaged, and we have a really healthy, secure relationship.
Oh, I love that. Well, and I love, like, I think this is like by the time this comes out, a few weeks ago, Masha and I had our episode of like the realities of healing, right? And like, you know, we see all, you're on the internet like I am, you know, we both have two eyes and thumbs, and we see so much bullshit of like, healing means this. Like I saw a podcast the other day that was like, she was a doctor saying this, and she was like, if somebody's triggering you, you need to not date them. You need to stop dating people that trigger you. And I was like, okay, what a waste of a generalized statement, because what we're doing here is like, it's not taking your pain and turning that into purpose and being able to look back. Yeah. Because like, let's think about it. The experiences that you had as a child in your young adult life, going into college, have all these, you would not have known what shit felt like to be able to appreciate a beautiful, incredible man like your partner. And without feeling that rock bottom and without feeling like you're gripping at straws, that sometimes is when you have to like open up your palms and be like, all right, I release, right? I surrender. Because yes. I have a very similar story in the sense of I did not lose a caregiver early in my life. I might have kind of felt like I did, but like not in that same vein. But still having that anxiety and understand and like constantly just wondering, like, I don't know about you. For me, it was a little later. I was 27, almost 28 when I started to do this work. Mm-hmm. And I really, for so long, I was like, there's something wrong with me. No one else goes through this. Because you talk to your friends and your friends are like, hey, man, I don't have that much bad luck. You're going, my family is always shaming me. I don't understand. You're beautiful. Why are you not with a guy? Oh, Sabrina's the problem. And I was curious to hear kind of your experiences with like working through what that, like how lonely it can feel as well when you're in this phase. Like I sometimes even think back on past me and I'm like, how did she do it? You know?
I was in grad school and I was in this really toxic relationship. It's like you made me go back to this experience. And this relationship was so bad. The guy was an alcoholic. He was doing drugs because we know that if you can be emotionally available if you're in a relationship with substances. So anyways, that was who I was dating at that time, an alcoholic. And I was trying to make new friends in grad school. I just moved to Portland, Oregon. And it was this girl and I thought we were like best friends. We were spending all this time together. I started telling her about my dating life and she said, I can't be friends with you anymore. She cut the friendship off.
Stop it.
And we were basically didn't speak for the 4 years that we were in the same program. And she didn't have emotional capacity for what I was going through. So eventually my way of coping with that, I just would never tell anyone about my relationships. Yeah. I would not introduce anyone I was dating ever. And I think that's so sad. I really compartmentalized my love life because I was so ashamed of it.
It's funny. Actually, as you said, I love how my reaction, I was like, jaw on the floor. Until I realized like, oh, I kind of did that. I didn't do that to somebody in the same vein. I had a friend. And like, this is the interesting thing about having like severe anxious attachment style. You know, somebody wrote being like, do secure people have anxiety in dating? And it's like, okay, anxiety is normal. Anxious attachment is where the line starts to draw. And it's like anxiety of, I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm a little confused. Like, is this person going to call me back? Like,
that's
what is this?
That's called being a human.
It's being a human. Where the anxious attachment starts to come in is like, what's wrong with me? Did I not do something right? Yeah. I'm such a piece of shit. No wonder nobody wants me. I have to get them in hyper fixating on them choosing you. I'm like, that's the divide.
Yes.
But when I lived in Venice. And I've been on my journey for a minute and I get very, I'm not even going to say, I used to say triggered. It was the incorrect use of the word. It's not triggered because there was an actual fucking issue. So it wasn't triggered. It's like, no, there was something there to cause the anxiety. It's not like it was a neutral inaction.
Yes.
And it was a friend of mine. And she, when I say anxiety, it was me at my worst times 1,000, like where she would just tell me what's going on. And I'm like, I remember it was this guy she'd met. She had like one date with him and his brother passed away. Oh. He was like a recovering drug addict. The brother was a drug addict and overdosed. And so the guy, and rightfully so, completely, he even told her, he was like, I'm removing myself. Like, I can't even handle this right now. And she made the entire thing about herself. Like every date was like, I don't understand. I haven't heard from him and he's not reaching out. And I kind of like one day I had to stop and I was like, dude, I can't fucking take this anymore. I was like, I love you as a friend and I love being with you. I was like, but you're so anxious that it takes away from the time that we spend because the whole time I'm trying to get you to not walk off this ledge. And after a while, it becomes exhausting. And like, this is kind of the thing with the anxious attachers. Like, it's not that there's something wrong with you, but it's also being cognizant that like, if your anxiety is that high, like not everybody has to stick around and take it.
No, I'm so glad we're talking about this because when I look back at that experience, I actually understand why she said, I can't be friends with you. We were in grad school. We had these huge demands on our time. Yeah. She didn't have the emotional capacity or time for my anxious attachment spirals. And I honestly, I get it.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to realize that when you start becoming secure, it's not just going to help in your romantic life. This is also going to help in your friendships. I have whole friendships that I had in my 20s where all we did was talk about boys.
Oh, yeah.
And dating, you know, analyzing each other's text messages at brunch to see like, oh, what did you say to them? What did they say back? I have whole friendships that I've had to redefine now in my 30s of like, oh, who are you? What do we want to talk about when we're not in an anxious spiral and consumed by our relationships? And I just think every area of my life has gotten better, the more securely attached I've become. And you realize there's a lot more interesting things to spend your time on than, oh, did he text me back?
We all know the hill I'm going to die on about the texting thing. And it's because I was her. I don't know about you, but like I was her. I remember like I would tell my mom, and I had that same thing. I had a friend, and I think she was definitely avoidant. And this was like one of my closest friends for years. Mm-hmm. And I stopped being friends with her in LA. Like I am the one who I was just like, I'm done. Like she had just, it was like one too many selfish things after a while. Like she would make everything about her.
Yep.
And it was just kind of where I was like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to do this, dude. Like, we've been friends for 10 years. And I'm like, it doesn't need to be 10 more. And the bigger reason being is like, I want to be around people that challenge me, that call me on my shit of like, hey, are you, mm-hmm. you sure about that? Like, do you want to mm-hmm. talk about this? And instead it would be like, I would send her like, you know, hey, like I just got this text, you know, you do the analyzing and I don't understand. He took 37 minutes to respond. What do you think this means? And instead of being like, hey, you know, hey, I think like something's coming up for you. Do you want to talk? She would chastise me and like ridicule me and guilt me. And I was just kind of like, okay, like you don't need to be this hard. But then she would go do the same thing. She would turn around and do the exact same thing. And I think it's like really being cognizant. I think, you know, when we even think about like this spiraling and the ruminating and like when you're around people that egg that on and enable that, then you can't be surprised why you're not able to get off that ride.
It's so true. And I think, I mean, obviously these dynamics show up in friendships too, of being anxiously attached and being attracted to those avoidantly attached friends who can't really give back to you yeah. in a supportive way. I did that for years. I was like the sidekick.
Yeah.
You know, I was never really allowed to be the main character in my life. I felt like I was just playing a supporting role in so many of my friendships.
And the funny thing is, and then we start, like, I was the same, but yet in romantic, I had to be the main character of everyone's movie. Mm-hmm. I had such main character energy of like, I don't understand, how could you not be thinking of me today? And it's like, because this person, you're nothing to this person. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as I love a lot of people, you do not impact my life in the way that these people might think that they impact my life. Like, mm-hmm. and I think that's also kind of a reality to face, especially with high anxiety, thinking that like that your lived experience is everybody else's. And it's really about taking a step back to understand that like, yes, I might be anxious because this person didn't text me, and I might be looking at the clock and counting every second that goes by, because realistically, I don't want to be abandoned. This has nothing to do with the other person.
Right.
And you talk to them. How many times I talk to people and they're like, oh, there's an issue? And you're like, your partner's been freaking out. They have no idea, because yeah. it's so true. Like, we make everything, especially when you have that anxiety, like everything yeah. becomes so about us that it actually, like, to me, it's I was being disrespectful to other people because I was making my issues that now had to be theirs.
Yeah, this is so huge. And I love that you talked about it's not even about them, talking about. So I love this term, repetition compulsion.
Ooh, tell me more.
So that is when we are dating our childhood unfinished business. Okay.
I've done that.
Right. So we're taking our the dynamics from childhood and we're repeating them in our adult romantic relationships. And it's the unconscious wish, this time I'll get a different result. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to make up for everything that I experienced in childhood.
Yeah.
I think this was Freud's one good contribution.
I know there's
psychology.
A few things Freud. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay. And like the other one was that a narcissist is the only one that can't work with a therapist. And I was like, okay, Freud,
yeah.
I'm here
yeah,
for you.
Yeah. But this whole idea of, I think so often we're going through a breakup or through a rejection and we're on the floor and we can't get up. We're curled up in a little ball and we're like, the world is over. My life is ending. But it's not about that person.
No.
It's about the wounding. It's about that fear of abandonment, about, hey, my biggest fear came true. I was abandoned. I'm not good enough, right? It's that wound that's getting poked. It actually has nothing to do with this person.
No.
So I think that's why one of the most powerful things I did on my healing journey was addressing those core wounds. And then I'm not taking that unfinished business into my dating life.
100%. For me, like, getting uncomfortable was really important. Mm-hmm. I continue to every day. I have to challenge thoughts, you know, like, you're a human. Like you said, the anxiety, when you start to work on that anxiety, that anxious attachment, it starts to manifest in different parts of your life. And like, for me, I always thought, no, it's just when romantic relationships, then you meet somebody really amazing, you start to do all this work in this relationship and you really focus on healing those parts, until I then saw, okay, now I'm having issues with friendships, not issues, but that anxiety yeah. is manifesting. Okay. Started to address that. Then you start to realize, oh, now in business I'm thinking that. And I yes. really looked at it as like, and I get it, a lot of people will say, but I'm on the spiral, I'm on the spiral. And I'm like, if you can just do even one thing to cut through that, whether that be, I have sour candies all over my house, because sour candies, your brain cannot think about worrying about the future, but also understanding what's happening in your mouth, that even if it's 20 seconds, I'm like, yeah. That a bit of space allows your brain to be like, oh, we've never done this before. Let's do another 20 seconds to be able to stop and be like, okay, wait a minute. Sure. That black and white thinking, because I wanted to talk to you about that too, like black and white thinking, especially when it comes to anxiety. Mm-hmm. And like, to me, I was her. I was the, if he doesn't text you every day, this guy doesn't like you. If he wanted to, he would. And it's like all those little fucking bullshit bumper sticker slogans until I had to stop and be like, wait a minute. You've had 30 dudes that text you morning, noon, and night, that text you good morning. Right before Clem passed away, the guy was, we had cute little nicknames on our phones. And we were texting each other all the time and we were spending every day together and he met all my fam. But then when Clem died, where the fuck was he? At home watching a movie, actually, to be honest. He didn't want to come over. And so after that, that's when my world kind of shook up. But I am curious, because in that vein of shame and blame and guilt and kind of like all of those emotions, can we talk a little bit about like, where does that really stem from? Like Freud said, guilt and shame are based on like being scared of being reprimanded by your parents. But when we're talking about healing through anxious attachment and having a lot of like, someone asked, you know, all this guilt I have about the past versions, how I treated people, things like that. How did you, I'll share mine after, but how did you specifically on your journey, or how do you advise people when you're dealing with all of that guilt and shame of like, I want to become a better person. I shouldn't be talking about my parents this way, or, oh God, I've treated this person terribly, but wait, I want to get better, but look how bad I was. The list goes on.
I think you really do have to get to this place where you go, I was doing the best that I could at the time. Yeah. Maya Angelou, you know, when we know better, we do better. And I think for me, having an understanding of attachment theory helped me really get to that place of compassion.
Yeah.
Because I can understand, oh, my attachment system was operating in a way for survival, because connection is survival. So being anxiously attached, of course, these were the relationship behaviors that I had. These were the fears I had. These were the things that I did. And now that I'm healing and I'm releasing all these negative beliefs about relationships and beliefs about myself, and now that I'm becoming securely attached, oh, I know that I can do better. I can show up better. But I have to have that compassion for my younger self, because it just developed out of survival.
Yeah,
we need connection to survive. We're simply showing up in ways that we think are going to guarantee us connection. So you have to have that understanding of, okay, it's the dialectic, you know, that term where two things can be true at once.
Two,
right?
Conflicting thoughts.
So two conflicting things. I have to accept, okay, I was doing the best that I could at the time. Maybe I had an anxious attachment style, and that's what I had as a way to survive and have connection. And now that I'm aware of this, I get to understand I'm the common denominator in my relationships.
Oh yeah.
I get to decide I want to become securely attached so I can have a healthy relationship. You have to make the decision and intentionally decide to show up differently. And just like you said, slowing down the reaction, learn how to respond instead of react. My fiance and I always joke, my favorite word is intentional.
Yeah.
I say intentional all the time. So we talk about, you have to have an intentional response when you're dating. You want to be dating intentionally. For me, it was a lot of identity work too. And now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, okay, who is securely attached Morgan?
Yeah.
Right? How does she operate? How does she speak? What are her boundaries? And really becoming that version of me.
100%. People ask me all the time, like, how'd you figure out your non-negotiables? I'm like, it was shit I wasn't going to put up with. Consistency. My father was inconsistent. Every day it was a different version of him. And I was like, that's a no-go. I'm like, I don't know about you. After living in major cities, there's one statement I make that if you don't live in a major city, you just don't understand what I mean. The person I go to bed to is the person I want to wake up to.
Oh, yeah.
And some people are like, what do you mean by that? I'm like, I can't tell you how many times in New York you'd have the best night ever. This guy was all over you, girl. It doesn't matter. I'm a straight woman, so I'm going to talk in heterosexual norms. And then the next morning you wake up and it's like they're ushering you out of the house as if they've never seen you before. And you're just like, what happened to that though? And all of a sudden you're completely closed off on me. And that was really important for me to take stock of, like, okay, what is it that I say I want? And what is it that I'm receiving? And what's the disconnect? So I say I want a secure partner. Half the time when I ask people, I'm like, what do you want in a relationship? Oh, I want someone I can do stuff with. And I want my ride or die. And I'm like, okay, this could be why you haven't met that person yet. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Because to me, my ride or die could be somebody that is in bed by 8:30 with me and up at 5 so that we can go to the gym and do all of the stuff that we need to do. And we have a complete schedule. To you, a ride or die could be somebody that you go traveling with at your bed. But I think until you understand what is it that I want, and then also, like, even that shame and blame, like, I used to shame and blame myself all day. Mm-hmm. You should be doing this. You should be doing that. What the fuck is wrong with you, Sabrina? Until I realized, wait a minute, I'm talking to little me like that.
Yes.
Every time I talk shit to myself, there's a 7-year-old that's like, cool, I can't do anything right. And until I realize, like, okay, I can hold space, I can hold myself accountable and be like, hey, dude, that's not cool, right? Like, I don't need to create a narrative though, because, like, oh, even today, I posted a video saying, you know, about the texting that, like, you know, everybody has their phone in their hands for 10 seconds. That doesn't mean you deserve access to me. Like, even if I have my phone, just because you think I have my phone in my hand does not mean I owe you a response. And someone said, well, hate to break it to you, but 96% of people agree with that. Everyone thinks this. And I wrote back to him and I said, where are the facts? Give me the studies. Give me the data. Give me the facts. Because what I hear is anxiety. What I hear is all of my experiences have been this. 96% of the people I encounter have done this. And that's when I'd be like, cool, what's your part in this?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know about you, but that was a huge question I asked myself a lot. What is your part in this? Not to blame myself, but to take accountability of, I let another emotionally unavailable person love bomb me.
100%. Oh, we have to take accountability. Are you into IFS?
I love IFS.
Internal family systems.
My favorite.
I am. I had Robert Schwartz on my podcast, actually. It was, like, so fun. I was like, wow, I read your books in grad school.
Anyway, awesome.
It was a fangirl moment for me. But I think about, we need to internalize that ideal parent.
Yes.
And a parent has boundaries. A parent is going to hold you accountable. A loving parent that is securely attached with you, they're going to say, hey, Sabrina, next time do this. But they're not going to beat you up. They're not going to be critical. They're going to be loving, but they're going to be clear and boundaried. So I think sometimes in self-help, it's too much of, okay, we want the love and acceptance without the hold yourself to a different standard.
Right.
And we do. We have to change. We have to change our identities. We have to take ownership or nothing changes.
Nothing changes if nothing changes. And I think that's, like, probably the, not probably, but that is the issue I have with, like, the pop psychology. If just everything having, like, that, to me, the pop psychology feels like black and white thinking. It's like, if it's not this, then it's this. Mm-hmm. And there's no space to understand, like, how people operate. When I asked about this episode, I think we had probably 40 different people being like, I need exact tools. Can you give me quick fixes? I need tips. How do I just stop caring about texting? And it's like, here's the exact reason why we're not going to do that. One, not sustainable, not realistic, but also you need to learn to fucking invest in yourself. Because if you think healing is, I'm going to listen to every podcast, watch some TikToks, and then just download some free guides, who's holding you accountable? Who's challenging your thoughts? Who's teaching you new perspectives? Who's understanding? It's just not feasible. And when it comes to this work, I don't know, I could speak for myself and I'll say this and I'm curious your thoughts. There is no fucking quick fix.
No. I will openly say my first coach that really, really helped me in all things. It was also like a business coaching as well, but it's also relationships. It was everything.
Yeah.
But I invested $10,000.
Yep.
That was not even money I had at the time.
Yep.
But I had to invest in order to really make a change. And I think you're so worth it. If you're not willing to invest in yourself, then I just don't know that you're quite ready. And it doesn't have to be $10,000.
No.
I know that's a lot. But you have to, it's like you have to break through that belief that you're not worth it.
And like the guilt of spending money,
you know,
of like, oh, who am I? Like, I have people even that'll be like, I can't afford to spend the $7 on a subscription. And I'm like, that's cool. I get it. I have so much space. I've been broke before.
Yes.
But it's like, but you can find your priorities, right? Like, well, then, you know what? Maybe for a month, like, don't have your Netflix, right? Like, if you have Netflix and Hulu and HBO and you're getting your matchas every morning, it's like,
yes.
Maybe then it's like what you're telling me is that your priorities are external factors that make you feel better versus, and again, it's not, It's not about, oh, come buy our course. No, no, no. Go find a therapist. Go invest your money in, you want to work with a coach? You want to take a course? You want to do, but do something. Because when you put money, exactly, you're telling yourself, I'm fucking worth it. Yes. I deserve this. And I care about myself. That is an act of self-love.
Absolutely. When we pay attention.
Oh.
You have to invest.
Okay. So I do want to ask you, we're going to do a slight pivot here on the, but it's not too much of a pivot because I did not know that you were long distance with your partner.
Yes.
I had no idea. And I am so curious to hear how a positive long distance experience, because people wrote in like, I am super highly anxious. To me, long distance never worked. It was really tough for me, but I'd love to know your experiences and how you actually can be successful in a long distance relationship.
I love this, Sabrina, because I did a ton of long distance in the past before this that was so unhealthy.
Yay. Paint me a picture.
For me, it was like, okay, if they live in a different country, awesome. Like they live in Mexico, awesome. They live in Spain, cool. Like I was all these different countries. And I remember one guy I dated was in North Carolina. And it turns out the one day he didn't text me, he was actually getting married. So very...
That'll happen.
So that'll...
And there's the... Can we just even take a second? The one day he didn't text me to show that it's like somebody can text you every fucking day and FaceTime and phone calls. It does not mean that they want a relationship with you.
100%. I was getting pictures, FaceTimes, everything every day.
How'd you find...
I found out I had a friend who was like a CIA girly. We all have those friends.
Of course we do.
She went on and she found the registry for the wedding.
Yeah, and the FBI should just hire women. I don't understand how have they not? All crimes would be solved. But,
right.
Okay, so you've had the unhealthy.
I've had the unhealthy. And I know you know this. When we are anxiously attached, we will gravitate towards those dynamics. Those are like, they're our fantasy.
Oh, yeah. I've been in many.
If I can just get that emotionally unavailable person to love me, right, then it's going to prove I'm enough.
And the fantasy of like, oh, I'll move there and we'll be able to live. And it's like, no. That's a fantasy. And it's fun to go after long distance, especially when you match online and you're like, they live in this other country and we can't meet for 6 months, but we're going to be together. It's like,
oh. Yeah.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
So the whole story of my partner and I, we dated in 2011 for 6 months. We went to undergrad together.
Cute.
And we met playing beer pong, if that gives you any idea of the dynamic. We were having so much fun during our college years. And honestly, we both had issues with our relationship with alcohol. We definitely were both binge drinking. This was not a conscious relationship. This was like we were hanging out and having fun. And we broke up after 6 months because I was going to get my doctorate in clinical psychology. He was staying another year because he was a super senior because he wasn't really prioritizing school. So he was an undergrad for like 6 years.
A super senior.
Meanwhile, I had two majors and I was done in four. Anyways, so he's doing his thing. And then I went to Portland. But this man, he would call me once a year, every year for 10 years.
No way.
Just to say hello. It was not like a flirty thing. It was just genuine. I care about you. We had a connection at one point.
Was it the same day every year? Was it like a calendar?
It was always random.
Okay.
And there were a couple times I remember vividly. I was driving downtown here in San Diego, and I was so busy, and I was on my like boss babe, you know, and I was like, I don't have time to talk to you. Wish you the best. Like, take care. Like I was very avoidant in that moment.
Okay.
Hung up on him. Still called me the next year. So this man was just very persistent. And it was 2020. It was during COVID. I was living in my family's basement in Montana on our 90-acre ranch. And he called me. And I thought, what the heck? I'll talk to him. This will be fun. Because let's be honest, there wasn't a whole lot of dating going on.
It's COVID.
So we talked and we just had the best conversation. I think our first call was 3 hours long. And we just caught up and he was really, really, really curious about who I was and what I was doing. And he's very emotionally available, always has been. Came from a very secure childhood. Okay.
So very
different from mine. And I realized I had changed enough to then allow him into my life, to then receive the kind of love that he was ready to give. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we were long distance. I was in Montana. He was in Cape Coral, Florida. And we would do phone calls. We would do FaceTimes. And then I remember vividly, I was in the parking lot of the post office one day and I texted him and I said, hey, are you serious about this actually being a relationship? If so, I would like to come visit you.
Put your dick on the table. I'm here for it.
You know, I'm like, I'm not fucking around.
No.
I'm 32.
And can we like just put a pin on that like, my ladies, it's time to pony up. It's time to fucking articulate how you feel. It's time to tell people how you feel. What do you have to lose besides your goddamn self-respect if you just let somebody know like, hey, I like you. Are you jiving? Are we in this? Are we not? Because if someone's going to tell me, oh no, that's going to scare them off. It's like, arrivederci, baby. I'd rather see you get the fuck out of my space than waste more time in it.
I always tell my audience, you're going to love this, stop watering plastic plants. Do not give your energy to a relationship that can't grow.
Thank you. Oh, I do love that. Thank you for that. And so, okay, so when you made that call, was he like, fuck yeah, let's do this?
So you know that moment where you're like, the little dots are moving, waiting for the response. So I'm like sitting there like, what the fuck is he going to say? Is he going to say, this has been nice, I'm not serious, you know?
Yeah.
But he said, I am very serious about this being a relationship. I would love for you to come and visit me.
How long had you been talking at that time before you were just like, hey, I want to do this? Like he never said.
3 months.
That's a good amount of time.
And, you know, I knew that we were exclusive at that point. Like somehow that had come up. But I didn't know because I was like, it's so long distance. He's all the way in Florida.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I was like, okay, where is this going to go? So it really was about 3 months in and I was super busy. It was early stages of my business.
Yeah.
So I also wasn't like, but yeah, 3 months in and then I came down.
I have to say though too, like I think the reason that I'm like, oh yeah, is because you had a path. You guys knew each other. You had, granted, obviously like you didn't, you know, 10 years, like you said, you grew.
Yes.
But you didn't just meet him on a dating app. And then all of a sudden you're like creating all these fantasies of someone. It's like, it sounds like you're like, no, I know him. I know him as a human. We spent time together. Time elapsed. We still kept in contact. And then now I'm a different version of myself. I'm ready to show up differently.
Yes. And we both had, you know what's so fascinating? We both became different versions of ourselves. And I know for a fact we could not have done it if we had stayed together. There's no way we could have grown in the ways that we needed to grow. And it's just, it's amazing. We did the growth we needed to as separate. And then I went and I had a hotel as a reserve, smart, like a backup option.
Absolutely.
But as soon as I got there, I could tell that he was just so ready, so emotionally available, treated me like a princess,
awesome,
respected all my boundaries, made me a little workstation. Cute. He was like, I know you're so busy and here's a little office desk for you. And I mean, he is the most loving, giving, generous, considerate, kind human I've ever met in my life.
Bless him.
And he's really restored so much of my heart that I didn't know needed to be healed.
Yeah.
Has healed in relationship with him.
100%. Yeah. Somebody had asked, like, do you heal in a relationship or something? It's like,
yeah,
you're going to heal more in a relationship than you ever imagined possible. But what I love, your story is very, my mama all my life has said this, it's not love, it's proximity and timing. And I'd always be like, I don't know what this woman's talking about. And even before Sex and the City had the yellow cab theory, no. Yeah. It's that when a man is ready and you enter their life, if you're there at the right time, you're the one that's going to get him. And it's not like a crapshoot. This isn't like a game.
Yeah.
I'm not meaning like literally. And people seem to misunderstand. They're like, what? So you mean I just have to be there? It's like, no. My point being is Ryan and I, same thing. When Ryan and I met, I had just lost Clem and he had just lost his sister. And by losing really important aspects of our lives, I lost a human, I lost an animal. It doesn't matter, right? It's like, that's what hurt you. Yeah. And that's where it got you. We have both said, had we not met when we did, if we met a year prior, I would have been way too anxious for him and I would have totally pushed him away. His avoidance, he would have gone way inwards because we needed that space to grow as people. Yes. And the biggest thing is, like, a lot of people ask, like, oh, well, should I wait for someone? And it's like, that's assuming that you're growing in the same way, that if you're going to wait for someone, like, you and your partner, wrong person, right time, right? And it's like, no. What made him right is that he came in your life at the right time.
Yes.
It's not that, oh, when you met him in college, you were like, right person, wrong time, see you in 10.
No.
It's, hey, this isn't working for us now. And if it's meant, it will come back. And if not, I release control to the outcome. Yeah. Here. Because at the end of the day, proximity and timing matters more than love. I can love you all goddamn day. I could think you're the best fucking person in the world, but that does not mean that I have the bandwidth to show up for you in the ways that I might need versus in 3, 4, 5 years or even a year, it doesn't really matter, to be able to show up differently so that I can start to receive that. Because you said that beautifully. I was a different version that I could receive. And I'd love for us to talk a little bit more about,
yeah,
the difference that, like, a secure love, like what that actually feels like when you're so used to toxic and highs and lows and inconsistencies. How did you acclimate? Because I'll share mine after. How did you acclimate to somebody more secure that was a different kind of love?
Absolutely. Well, you know this, that when we're in a toxic relationship, it's all about that intermittent reinforcement, which is so addictive, the same as it is with gambling.
Yep.
Of you're getting these high highs and these low lows, right? Mm-hmm. So our brain starts to associate, oh, that's how I'm supposed to feel in love, when in reality, it's not.
No.
It's so toxic. It's so bad for your nervous system. It's not sustainable at all. Doing the healing work and then being in a secure relationship that was stable, I had moments where I wanted to sabotage it.
Oh, yeah.
But I had done enough work to catch the moments. I'll tell you the story. We were driving from Montana to Florida with my two dogs and a U-Haul.
Fun.
Okay. And this is a man that drove from Florida to Montana to my family's house, helped me pack all my stuff into the U-Haul. He was so kind and patient during the whole process. And I think my nervous system was like, oh my gosh, this is so nice. This is so much investment. I'm so not used to this. And then we're driving. We're in, like, South Dakota. And I had this anxious attachment spiral. Out of nowhere, I became convinced he was cheating on me. No evidence.
Been there.
Just like, okay, this is too good to be true. Too good to be true. So what did I do? I went through his phone and we
found nothing, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I found nothing. So
except probably like him boasting about you and you're like, damn it.
I went through his phone and it was in a hotel room in South Dakota. And I could have not told him, but I knew I needed to tell him. That's what securely attached me would do. So I remember I went to him and I told him what had happened. He was obviously very understanding and we repaired it in that moment. But I just think back to my anxiously attached self would have for sure found ways to sabotage that.
Oh, 100%.
Like, I would have kept trying to find things. I would have started a new relationship somewhere. Because I was so good at doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Of like, oh, if the love is available to me, let me find a way to mess it up.
Yeah.
So it really is getting your nervous system accustomed to, oh, I don't have to work for this. Like, love is available to me. This person is curious about me. They care about me. They're emotionally attuned to me. And I can learn how to accept that and also learn how to show up and give it in 100%. Return.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the weirdest feeling. It is. It's a weird feeling when you're so used to like my friend was sharing, Nicole, about the brain of like, she was like, dopamine happens in unpredictability. That's why it's so sexy. Yes. Are they going to call me? Are they not? What's happening? Right? That limbo. And I was watching 90 Day Fiance. Do you watch that show?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. 100%. This is the tropical one. No. The other way around. I watch like every version. So this is the new season of The Other Way. Or the tropical one. I can't remember. One of them. And there's the Italian guy and the girl from the States. I don't remember where she's from. And when they met, he's Italian. So he says, threesomes. I love my threesomes and his threesomes. And when he met, he was very clear with her of like, threesomes are part of my life. I want to maintain that. And she said, okay. Cool, right? Hey, then you guys agree, right? Like there's someone for everybody. Like threesomes might not be my thing, but there are plenty of people that like will. And so, of course, now you start to see, and it's like, it's painful kind of to watch this because you see that he is very consistent. He keeps saying like, I want to have a threesome. Like, let's do it. Like and she keeps being like, I don't want to do that. I don't feel comfortable. Why won't you change for me? And it's like, I'm just kind of watching this dynamic being like, wait, I'm sorry. Why should he have to change for you, though? You entered in a contract where you said this was okay. Just that's okay. You have every right to say that doesn't work for you anymore. But then that's a conversation of then should we still be together? Because if that's a priority to him and not to you.
Yes.
That's cool. Like then that's when I'd be like, hey, I think we've outgrown each other. Like this isn't we're not on the same page. And the reason I bring this up is because then they had this scene where they're at the beach and his friend is even saying like, you know, what's going on with the threesome thing? I see, keep saying threesomes because the Italian
that's
accent.
That's how he says it.
And every time Ryan hears it, he'll run back and be like, the threesomes. But his friend even said, he was like, what's going on? And she was like, I don't want to do them. And he does. And even the friend, he was like, they have a really big, he's like, they're sexually compatible. And he was like, they have a lot of chemistry and they all they want. And then they interviewed the guy after. And he was like, yeah, you know, I like this dynamic because it's exciting and it's different. And he's like, I don't want something boring. And he was like, ugh, I know what it is. Pretty much alluding to like healthy. He was like, I want a relationship that has that passion and that fire. I want that emotion and that feeling. If it were boring, I wouldn't want it anymore. And that kind of reminded me of like, I don't know if this person's going to stay. Do they like me? Are they not? That was my baseline. I was used to asking those questions. So that when I met somebody I will always say, I'm like, oh yeah, you think you're good when you're single. Wait until you meet somebody and now you have to receive it. Because I did the same thing. I would find issues where my mom would even say, and she's like, are you trying to break up with him? Or like, is this actually something that bothers you? Or are you just trying to find an out? Because I was the queen of finding an out. And the worst part was like, Ryan and I have had like just so many issues as humans, right? Like you're two people trying to fucking navigate the planet.
Yeah.
And we had something like a couple of weeks ago and he like stepped up to the plate and he fucking like worked through it and went to his therapist and we had a lot of talks. And I remember after my mom's like, are you happy? And I was like, this is weird for me. I'm not used to having that dynamic where you express to somebody something that bothers you and then they internalize that, they take it, then they make action and now you have a better relationship. And I wanted so badly to be like, no, it's not good enough and you're not doing enough. And I had to stop and I was like, no, this is more than enough actually. This for me was, okay, Sabrina, you didn't actually believe that somebody could love you to the point where they would want to actually step up for you, because I am so used to my dad says he loves me but he hurts me. My caregivers keep telling me they love me but they're not stepping up for me, they're not changing, they're not evolving, they're not growing. So when I met a partner that was, I was like, I'm sorry, I don't know what to do with this.
Yes, I can relate 100%.
It is wild to me, and it's wild, I think, when we really start to understand what healing actually means to me. Above all, when you're trying to heal your anxious attachment style, to me, what that means is like, you're trying to put space, right? Like you're learning patience and space and compassion, and you're taking the black and the white and creating shades of gray, and you're creating a nuance, and you're understanding that people operate differently. And that to me has helped me in life, because then I don't freak out about shit anymore. You know, like,
yes,
I went this morning to get an IV and they couldn't find my vein for an hour and a half. And they kept saying, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I was like, I'm good, man. Don't worry about
it.
Because I used to scream and get mad. I have to go. What the fuck is this? Like, why are you wasting my time? Like, what? You can't even get this right. And instead I was like, you know what?
They're human. How to respond.
Yeah. I said, listen, they're human. I was like, well, I can't control. I said, I also have to take accountability. It's like, my fucking veins are the problem, right? I was like, you tried 7 different needles in 4 different parts of my arm. Like, maybe it's a me thing.
Yeah.
And it just allowed me to have softness.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, to me, the feminine and masculine to me is just safety.
Safety, 100%. I was talking about that the other day. It's just safety. We see all this. Oh, man, there's so much on Instagram that I just want to. Yeah, it's not.
Can you tell me, actually, share with me, what's your least favorite thing that you see on Instagram? Or like in the interwebs of like the dating shit.
So it would be the like, how to get the guy, like what to text them, like the whole like text them this, you know, 7-word sentence to make them want you, like that type of like surface bullshit really bothers me.
That clickbait. Because yeah, to me, all that does is I'm like, you're just exacerbating the anxiety, right? Like you're,
yeah.
Someone asked me the other day, what do you think of the book, Why Men Love Bitches? And I was like, that, I read it like 7 years ago and was like, this is amazing. And then I read it a couple of years ago and I was like, this is shit.
It's terrible.
Because what it is, it's just teaching you how to be a good girl. Nice girls do this, but bitches do this. And I'm like, I don't want to be that.
No, I always tell people, if you want to play games in your dating life, you're going to play games in your relationship. You're building relationship culture from day one. So you need to show up as an open, honest, direct, securely attached person as much as you can.
100%.
Because that's the kind of relationship you want to build.
And like, it's okay to take up space as that. Like we did get another few questions that we got. And I'm paraphrasing the questions because so many of them were kind of in the same vein of like, I don't understand. Like, do I just tell them what I want in the beginning? And it's like, yeah, that's actually exactly how that goes.
That is what you do.
Set the precedence of like, and that's why all the time, and I'm sure you can relate to this, when people ask me like, how did you find someone that accepts you for who you are and loves you this much? I'm like, I had to show up like that and be okay with myself.
Yes.
Because if I was uncomfortable with myself, why would then you be comfortable around me?
Yes, we have to have that kind of relationship with ourselves. I was thinking about my relationship with my partner and how I had self-abandoned in so many of my past relationships. I'm sure you know.
Oh, yeah.
And even to the point of like taking on other people's hobbies. My partner loves to fly fish. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's not something I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to see me in a boat. I'm not going to buy a fly fishing rod. Okay. And that's his thing that he gets to go do. And I have my things that I get to do. Yeah. And we're in a healthy, secure relationship. Same when I moved from Florida to Montana. For the first time ever, I was in such a healthy relationship that I loved him so much that if he had wanted to stay there, I would have gotten it and I would have loved him and been okay with it. But in the past, I either would have said, oh, I love living in Florida, I'll stay here with you. Or I would have said, you either come to Montana or we're done. And if you don't come to Montana, then you don't love me. But we had this beautiful conversation, really hard conversation, where I realized, hey, I want to live in Montana. I know that that wasn't your decision. If you want to come with me, you can, but you also don't have to, because I love you enough that I want you to be happy and you pick what works for you.
You both get to choose.
Yeah. I think that's like one of the best things about securely attached, healthy relationships is you realize, oh, we have these two identities and we want to support each other to grow as individuals. And you were talking about dopamine. And I think it's awesome when you can say, oh, what if I get my adrenaline and my you know, big experiences of excitement and thrill, whatever. What if I get that somewhere else than my relationship? Like, what if I go travel? I'm going to go to Rome instead of having drama in my relationship. So I think you can just start to realize, oh, the relationship gets to be a secure base. And then both of us just get to grow and be our highest and best selves within the relationship.
100%. For me, my secure relationship is like, I can say no. I can express myself. I've learned, like, we had an issue the last week with like a family thing. And I just was straightforward and was like, hey, here's what's bothering me. I need to share this with you. And we did. And it was hard. And he cried. And I cried. And I remember, at the end of it, I stopped him and I said, the reason I'm saying this to you is because I love you and I want to work on our relationship. And I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. But I'm also very cognizant. And I've been honest with him. I'm like, I'm not going to say things like, I'm never going to leave you, because that's not a reality. Because I'm a human with agency. And we might outgrow each other, right? Here's a big tip. If you really want to be in a secure relationship, yes, receive all the love and do all that and everything. But one thing I will suggest to everybody is like, also get okay with the fact that it might not last forever. That's what makes it secure, is that you're growing and you're evolving. But then the secure part of it is also knowing that if it runs its course, this was beautiful and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Because I know for me, before Clem passed away, I used to joke and be like, oh, I'm going to mummify him. Like, he's going to be with me forever. And people would say stuff and I'd snap and I'd be like, no, he's literally going to be fucking with me forever. And it was like, I couldn't fathom life without my dog. Now, he's a dog. Of course he was going to die, right? Like, and so when he died, I completely lost myself.
Yeah.
And so even with Ryan, every time, I always will reiterate, I'm like, I choose you. and I choose to work on this, like you are choosing me and you're choosing to work on this. When one or both of us decides that we are no longer making that choice, it was great. I love you. This was fun. Because to me, it's not, oh God, well, I can't be with him. It's like, that's going to heighten your anxiety because then you're always scared of what's to come versus I know who I am. I'm a fucking baddie. And if this ends, no worries. I'll find someone else. And if it doesn't, yay, I'm here to work on this relationship. It allows you to just be like, what you got, universe? Like, come my way, because you leave open like space for magic to happen.
It's so true. And it's so beautiful when I always think about this as you have an open palm. Yeah. So many of us are like squeezing tightly to the relationship. But the open palm allows us to really enjoy the relationship, relax into it. Instead of gripping so tightly, you're like squeezing it to death.
Exactly. And like being scared, like, and then being scared that if you're not performing, it's like when you hold on so tight, you're actually not allowing yourself to genuinely connect with somebody because you're just, I'm only okay if I have you.
Yeah.
And let me tell my anxious babes out there, if you don't think that people can pick up on that energy, you are gravely fucking mistaken, because I have seen my clients will send me like text conversations and I'm like, if I received this message that you sent, I'd be running the other way.
Yes.
Because all I see here, well, you know, you said you were going to call me at 9 and you didn't even got blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you only text me at 9:30 and da, da, da. And it's like, yo, what you're telling this person is like, I'm only okay if I have you. And if you don't do it, and it's like, hey, people are allowed to be human. I said I was going to call you at 9 and called you at 9:30, right? Like,
yeah,
not the end of the world. So sorry, I got out of this thing later. It was a few minutes behind. I couldn't get to my phone. But when it's such a like hyper fixation of like, I don't understand what's going on. The vibe is different and all that. It's like, yo, I've had one date with you. I don't know who you are. I don't know what fucking vibe you're picking up on. It sounds like you might be also imagining that something is off. I'm not going to say that to somebody. I'm just saying that between the two of us, I used to. That's why I would create scenarios. I would create the, he hasn't heard from me. Well, no, you know what? I realized he did act a little different the last time I saw him. And I was like, no, he wasn't. You know, that was my hypervigilance.
Can we just, it's like, when I think about all of the energy that I wasted analyzing relationships, I think I could have had a whole other PhD in something.
100%. You could have written 25 more books. That's how I'm like, I got stories for days because I've done it. And I think you and I can both attest to the fact that that does not lead you to the healthy and secure relationship.
No. And I always tell people that a healthy relationship is just a multiplier. It's just a multiplier of the love that you have for yourself.
Yeah.
So it can't fill a void. If you don't love yourself, if you don't have the high self-worth, a relationship's not going to come in and magically make you feel awesome about yourself.
No.
But if you do have self-love and you have high self-worth, a relationship can come in and it can add to it.
Yeah.
But it's never going to fill a void.
It's an addition to, not instead of. My mom almost always said that. And like, I'll say this, if you're in the dating experience and you're starting off with like wild high anxiety and you can't, let me tell you, just because you get into a relationship, that doesn't go away.
No.
And I see this all the time where it's like, there's crazy anxiety for like 1, 2, 3 months. And it's like, what do you think is going to change that all of a sudden you're in the relationship? I'm like, but then you're going to worry, am I going to lose them? Are they going to want someone else? And I was like, it's always going to multiply because it was never about them. So how could they be the ones that all of a sudden heal it?
It's so true. And I think as a relationship gets further along, you have these moments of moving in together,
exactly.
Getting engaged, walking down the aisle. This is deeper, deeper investment. If you haven't healed your anxious attachment, it's going to rear its ugly head during those times of deeper emotional investment. So that's why it's so good to deal with it as early as you can.
100%.
Because it may come up, but I think we want to get to a place where it's like baby waves instead of the tsunamis.
Exactly. Right? That window of tolerance.
Yes. Where we can actually deal with it well and we can respond to it instead of react. So the earlier on, I mean, obviously before a relationship is a great time to work on it. If you're single, work on it now, but just work on it as early as you can.
100%.
In a relationship.
I know one of my clients asked me and I said, okay, let me ask you right now. I was like, you're in the early stages. I said, you guys move in and you don't have to worry about this texting. What's your problem? And she like stopped me and I was like, exactly. I was like, stop making shit bigger than it needs to fucking be. What's the issue? If you, okay, omit the fact that, oh, I haven't heard from him every day. Okay. Jump up 6 months. Right? Where now you're in a relationship with this person. So maybe you live with this person. I'm like, okay, when you live with them, no shit, you're not going to text them every day. You fucking wake up and see them. You're still going to have, what is this about? Right?
What is it really about?
What's it really about? If he were texting you, because then I got, like, when somebody wrote into me today, the guy I'm dating, he only texts me 5 times a day. And I'm like, oh my fuck.
Oh my God, that would drive me nuts.
Girl, I'm like, what do you mean only text me 5 times a day? I'm like, that is more than me and my fucking partner text each other on like a week.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's where we have to look and be like, hey, I think in that point, this is that anxiety of fear of I'm going to lose it. What's happening? Because the funny part was he only texted me 5 times, but then the rest of her email was like all these other terrible things he's doing. And I'm like, wait. So you're focusing on the texting. He only texts her 5 times a day. And I'm like, that's a lot considering that this person has all this other shitty behavior. He's unavailable. He told her he didn't want a relationship. And I was like, but you're focusing on the fact that he only texts you 5 times a day. So for my anxious babes, let's release control on the texting and start focusing on other aspects of the relationship / what the fuck that texting actually means to you.
I think so. And obviously, I know you know this, that there are times where we have to talk about the communication. I call 100%. This, we have to communicate about communication. If 100%. Somebody's going dark on you for 3 days at a time, or you're trying to make plans and they cancel the plans right before, obviously there's times where you have to have a conversation, and it's really helpful to be in an emotionally regulated place, show up as securely attached as possible, and have a conversation about, okay, what are your needs to try to build secure attachment? But I think what happens, which you and I know, is people are in their anxiously attached place.
Oh, yeah.
And then they have all these needs that are beyond what a healthy person's capacity is to give over a long period of time. Because I also think about sustainability.
100%.
Because you can have those like even 2 month, 3 month, like, oh, fairy tale relationship, whatever. Is it sustainable? Is somebody texting you 5 times a day sustainable? It's not.
Mama always said when they start at 100, where do you want them to go? And she's like, if it's too sweet, it's going to give me a toothache. And it's the same. I'm like, when somebody, you're texting more, you know, but then like after a month their vibe changed, it's like, girl, it's not, this is not realistic. Maybe for you, because you have high anxiety, it's realistic, but that's not realistic for most people to maintain that. And it's so, God, Morgan, you and I could talk about this for another fucking year and a half.
We'll be here like 5 hours.
But I mean, thank you for coming on and being vulnerable and sharing your wisdom. We see a book back here. Can you plug a little bit? Where can people find you and where can people learn?
So Love Magnet, Get Off the Dating Roller Coaster and Attract the Love You Deserve. It's not the lesbian love story on Amazon named Love Magnet, although I'm sure that book is great. But this book is actually experiential. Awesome. So it's like a workbook when you go through it. Yeah, you can get it on Amazon. And my podcast, Let's Get Vulnerable, so many episodes about attachment styles and attachment theory. So if that's your thing, check it out. But yeah, Sabrina, I mean, we could talk for hours. This has been so much fun.
Thanks for coming, man. And I check out the podcast because I was on yours. So yes. You can.
Oh my gosh. People loved our episode. So go listen to it. It's so good.
Dude, thank you again so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.